Good morning. Thanks for joining us. I am so amazed by this book and by the story that I've never heard of, but we're going to talk about that in a moment. Nick Foster joins us. He's a former European Union diplomat serving in Venezuela and Brazil. He writes features on international real estate for the properties page of the International New York Times and the House and Home section of the Financial Times, among other outlets. He's written this new book that is just fascinating, The Jolly Roger Social Club, a true story of a killer in paradise. And really, you're here to talk to us about, you know, when you think you want to buy that paradise property, you know, in the Caribbean or any place, that we really should be very cautious. How are you this morning, Nick?
Pretty good. How are you, Twanda? Good to be with you. I know how much you like books, so it's going to be fun discussing this one.
Oh, yes. Definitely. Well, first of all, tell us why you decided to write this. This was just a fascinating book.
You know what? It was totally by chance. I was writing a feature on real estate for the Financial Times. It was on Panama, and I just did some research on the internet, came across this really weird story, sad story, but also weird story, about a man who fled his home in a beachside community favored by expats in Panama on the Caribbean coast called Bocas del Toro. Mm-hmm. This young man, William Dathan Hulbert, who's from Hendersonville, North Carolina.
Anyway, and
not far from where you are. And in fact, the local police arrive. What do they find at his home? Well, they find, first of all, five corpses rotting in the jungle out back.
Oh my gosh.
They find ammunition for an AK-47. They find checkbooks belong to people that wasn't him.
Mm-hmm.
And they find a jar of, you know, those kind of gold dental fillings and crowns?
Yes.
So they figure out that something pretty serious has taken place at that house.
Mm-hmm.
And my book describes what that was. I got to tell you, the Jolly Roger Social Club actually existed. I found that out. It was a bare boards drinking den that this man, William Dathan Hulbert, set up with his accomplice down in Panama. And you know what he did? He essentially used the bar to listen into his neighbors, other expats, talking about how they kept their savings, how they kept their real estate, and the legal ways, the shell companies, the dummy corporations that they used to keep their real estate, keep their assets secret. And he basically listened into their stories, found out their secrets, and murdered them for their real estate.
Yeah,
it's an amazing story.
It is. Nick, you know, my first thinking is, he's so young. Where did he get the flim flam shyster crooked thief? Where did that all come from?
You know what? That's a great question to wonder, because I was asking myself that for years, trying to figure it out. I think there's a few sides to this. He was a small town crook in the U.S. and he was a real estate crook. So he carried out a scam successfully in Oak Island, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And with the profits from that scam, basically he falsified some real estate documents. And this was at the time when, you remember when real estate was taking off, that people's homes were going up double-digit percentage every year. You remember those times?
Mm-hmm. I do.
2004, 5, 6, do you recall?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a long time ago now. But he took advantage of the way that people just in that kind of really heated market didn't do their sums properly and didn't do due diligence, essentially, didn't check all the documents.
Mm-hmm.
And he profited from that. He carried out this scam then in Oak Island. Then he was on the run. I mean, people were, even though there was a wanted posted, you know, up for him. He was, the police were looking for him right across America. He fled with his accomplice to Central America and essentially carried out much worse crimes over there. But yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? How do con men, because he's a con man as well, how do con men operate? One really weird thing that I found out about him was that, like you say, he was really young when he was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was just 30 years old. But when I asked his neighbors, how old do you think he is? They'd say, you know what? like late 30s, 40.
Yeah, they thought he was
older. People often thought that he was 10 years older than he was, and I think that that was part of the plan, you know, to appear older.
With the long hair, you know, he let his hair grow out. He was buffed, you know. Everybody thought he was on steroids. It was just a little, all these little funny things about him, and just watching him operate and really operate on these people, literally, who are just having fun, who have just come to the island to retire, to hide out, whatever they're doing. And I love that you were expressing how expats, you know, nobody asks anybody else's business. It's my business. Don't ask me my business, you know. So it was really interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. Exactly. And it was almost, you know, you really hit on something there, because it was almost considered, you know, like rude or not done, not the done thing, to ask people about what they did back in the States. And yet there were some clues. This guy set up his Jolly Roger Social Club, his bar, and he sent out flyers. Mm-hmm. Guess what they said? Over 90% of our members survived. I mean, there's a hint there, right?
Yes.
Wonder, I mean, there's a hint of something. It's ominous.
Yes.
And yet, you know, people didn't, they were having too, they were partying too much,
yes.
I guess, to spot the warning signs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's an amazing story.
I think in one of them, it kind of alluded to that one guy said he only drank like a couple of drinks, and then he woke up the next day and didn't know what happened or where he was and all of that. So even the part about leaving your drink and somebody slipping something in your drink.
I think that was pretty routine.
Yeah.
In that bar, but you know what he did? He did the reverse thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have his own bottle of, he called himself Wild Bill, and he would have his own bottle of vodka, which only Wild Bill and his accomplice Jane, Wild Bill and Jane, would be drinking. Everybody else would be drinking some other vodka or some other alcohol, and people figured out later on that bottle was just full of water.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't drunk. He was.
No,
he was listening.
Yeah, exactly. He was spiking other people's drinks, but the drinks that he was himself, and drinking were, you know, essentially just water. I mean, he needed to do that because the whole point about his crime was information. You know, people talking too freely about their assets, about their money, and about their savings.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, to do that, he had to be, you know, he had to be sober.
Right. So. You know, while we're talking about this book, and the amazing part is this happened in the 2000s. It wasn't 20 years ago. It wasn't 30. This just happened.
No, in the 2000s. It happened between, the killings took place between 2007 and 2010.
That's amazing. That's so amazing.
This is recent. This is absolutely recent. And I guess as a writer, you know, that makes a difference too, because you're researching a story kind of in real time.
Mm-hmm.
He was already, he'd already been locked up by the time I started to, you know, research the story. But still, a lot of stuff was happening that I talk about in the book, The Jolly Roger Social Club, which happened in real time. You know, I was, you know, I think readers will find the story just, you know, amazing.
It is.
Especially after he's locked up.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, you know, researching it, I was amazed as well. You know,
I'm
so it was happening in real time.
Yeah.
And it kind of unfolded to me as a thriller. And I've tried to kind of repeat that in the book so that, it will read kind of like, I guess, like a thriller.
It is a thriller. It's totally a thriller. So look. If you want to retire overseas, because this is what Nick really, the point he really wants to make. If you really want to retire overseas, Nick, give 5 tips.
Okay. So, Twanda, I reckon the things are, first of all, you know, rent a home. Don't get talked into buying something straight off. You know, give yourself some time. Rent a home. If you come to a place that you really love, isn't it much easier to get out of a rental contract than have to, you know, sell a home? So just rent, you know, don't lay out all that money on a home at the beginning, but rent. Secondly, try and find out from people whose views are realistic. You know, people have been in the location where you want to settle a long time, and whose views aren't kind of rose tinted. Okay, because every location has got its downside,
right
wherever
right.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
Third of all, you know, don't make big decisions in a bar over cocktails. You know. Try and make them in the morning, you know, just don't get talked into things in bars over drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I think is kind of really useful is to try to learn the local language.
Absolutely.
I guess most places where North Americans retire to or would consider retiring to maybe in their late 50s. And so would be places where they speak Spanish, right? You know, Mexico, Central America,
yes.
Ecuador. So just try and, you know, before you go, take some classes, you know. Try and, because you'll make more friends as well, right? I mean, that's also important, right? When you when you get there, you'll make more friends. And finally, if you find a real estate deal which is too cheap, which seems like an incredible bargain, it's probably too cheap for a reason. So be realistic about opportunities that are kind of put your way.
Absolutely. And the thing about learning the language is also so you'll really know what's being said and what's going on. Because a lot of times people can talk over your head and you have no clue. So really important.
Exactly.
But look, go out and get this book. It's called The Jolly Roger Social Club, A True Story of a Killer in Paradise. Phenomenal story. Nick Foster is the author. Thank you so much for joining us, Nick.
Tawanda, it's been a really great pleasure speaking with you. Have a really great day.
Thank you.